See you. I hope you guys are having a wonderful day. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm going to, you're going to get a text message in 1 second because I want to send everybody a text, kind of reminding them that we're doing our financial consciousness training this morning. And I want to say hello to everybody, and I hope you guys are doing well. So give me 1 second while I send this text. So again, if you're not on the text list, make sure you get on there. Text the word morning to 87948. That's morning to the number 87948, and you'll get an invitation. We do this every single morning at 10 a.m. And there we go. Okay, so give me a second here. All right. How's everybody doing? Everybody sleep good tonight or last night? I know I did. I had a dream, and I'm about to tell you all about my dream in a second. It was really interesting. It was a really interesting dream, and it had to do with this class. And so I felt like that was God's way of telling me to share this with you. And so I'm going to share it in 1 second. So let me just say hi to everybody and see who's in here. I see AC Salam and Allegra. Let's see. Oh, Lagos. Ah, okay. Not very nice. We have a brother from Lagos. And yeah, I hate the fact that to get on the text list, you have to text the word morning to 87948, because I know some of you that are international can't do that. And so the best way I could say you could join is if you go to drboycedaily.com. That's one way. Also, we do email out the link. So if you're on the email list, we can do that as well. And actually, speaking of Nigeria, I'm actually going to send you all out later on today. I'll send out that list of Africa stocks you can invest in if you want to benefit financially long term from the growth rate of the African economy. So make sure you get on the text list. Text the word morning to 87948. I'll text that out. I'll also shoot it out in an email. If you're not on the email list, you can just email support@theblackbusinessschool.com. That's support@theblackbusinessschool.com. And also, a lot of people don't know, you can actually get started in the Black Business School for free. You don't need a nickel. This class is free. And then the Powernomics training on Wednesday nights is 100% free. You can bring all your family members. And if you go to theblackbusinessschool.com, you can sign up for free. And we send out lots of free stuff. So we love to help you as much as possible for free, just so you know that we are a legitimate institution. We have to do this because the internet's full of financial scammers and people who became financial experts after taking a class that lasted 2 days or whatever. I've been doing this for 30 years. You can check my record. Go back to 1993. I taught finance at the University of Kentucky in 1993. And then, Indiana University. Then I taught at Kentucky. I taught mathematics at the University of Kentucky after that. And then I taught at Syracuse University. I was on the faculty there, et cetera. So I mentioned that periodically because sometimes as an institution, we have to separate ourselves to make people know, like, look, we're not just some guy who's like got a big Instagram following that's like, hey, I'll show you how to invest in stocks or whatever. We understand it from a deep theoretical level. Also, we're deeply committed to Black wealth. And we actually have a team of psychologists that understand the psychological boundaries that block us from Black wealth. There was a great interview by a friend of mine named John Holt Bryant. He was on The Breakfast Club recently, and he was explaining so well all the psychological problems that cause us to mess up our money and cause our credit scores to be in the toilet and cause us to end up in bad financial situations and cause us to make really bad decisions. And I said, thank you. I appreciate the fact that other people are saying this because we've been saying this for a very long time. And a lot of you know this. A lot of you have heard this. A lot of you, this is old news. But for a lot of people, they don't get it. They don't see that connection between the psychology and the economics. If your mind's right, your money will be right. If your mind's wrong, your money will always be wrong. If your mind's right, your money will become right. Shout out to Ash Cash. I think he has a book called Mind Right, Money Right. Ash Cash, I think he works with the Earn Your Leisure guys, and I really like him a lot. He was at the All Black National Convention last year. But literally, if your mind's right, your money will be right. So when we talk about mental health, when we talk about healing, when we talk about really things like therapy, this is not disconnected from your economic outcomes. It's very, very hard for an emotionally unhinged person to have a good life. Let me know if you know what I'm talking about. Give me a yes if you get what I'm saying. It's very, very difficult for a person who's emotionally just all over the place to be disciplined. It's very, very hard for that person to have good relationships. It's very, very hard for that person to build their economics. It's very, very hard for that person to do anything right. Their mental health will be off. Their physical health will probably be off because they're consuming things like either unhealthy food or drugs or alcohol to heal, to deal with the pain, to self-medicate, right? So their physical health will be off. Their mental health will be off. Their relationships will be off because if you're not he if you haven't healed, then you're gonna fight with everybody and get triggered and constantly anybody. I mean, a lot of you have been around people that get triggered easily and go crazy and all that. It's very hard to work with somebody like that. You can't. You say, let's build a business, right? You can't build anything with someone who's emotionally unhinged. And then if you go into the financial side of it, which is all connected, bad relationships ruin your finances. Divorce is a multi-billion-dollar industry. When couples fight, they end up giving their money away to the lawyers. When people don't make an estate plan, when they're not emotionally balanced enough to plan their estate, then all that fighting that happens in the family, it's putting money in the pockets of the lawyers. Because now all the different siblings have to go hire a lawyer so they can all go fight over mama's money. Right? I mean, it's all connected. That's what I'm saying. It's all connected. And I really hope that you'll give me a yes to let me know you're seeing the connection. I want you to see it. I want you to just believe it. I don't want you to just believe it because I said it. I want you to see it. Like, I really want you to believe it because you believe it, not because I said it. You understand? I want you to be the one to say it. I don't want you to say, that you're right. Don't say you're right. I want you to say that's right. You understand? There's a difference. If you say you're right, that's you going along with it and saying, well, Dr. Boyce said it, so it must be true. No, we're not there yet. I need you to take this pill and swallow it, and we're going to internalize this. I need this growing inside of you. So I need you to say that's right. Where even if I'm not standing here saying any of this to you, you're still telling your friends, you're like, yeah, if your mental health is not right, then your money won't be right, and then your relationships won't be right. And if your relationships aren't right, your mental health isn't going to be right, which also means your money's not going to be right. Do you understand how there's like a trinity there between health, wealth, and relationships? It's all connected. Think about this. I mean, if you ever want your mental health to go crazy, just get in like a bad relationship. I read about a terrible story this morning, and I promise you, I'm going to get to the main point I mentioned earlier in a second. Don't let me forget about that. I read a story today on Spiritual Word or something, one of those blogs or something. It was like the worst story to see this early in the morning. And I hope I don't ruin anybody's day, but I got to share this because I thought it was really sad. There was this lady who was had a 3-year-old son, and she was going through a custody battle. And she gets on a FaceTime call, and she tells the baby, she says, "Say goodbye to your daddy." And then he says, "Goodbye, daddy." And then she kills herself and kills the baby. And I'm sitting here, and you know why this affected me? It affected me because it made me think about things like postpartum depression. It made me think about which we don't talk about things like this enough. It made me think about just how crazy people get, and when they're in a bad relationship. Like, a bad relationship will make you insane, and if you don't have a process to kind of cool yourself off and help yourself see straight. A bad relationship. I've seen good people go berserk bananas, or jealousy, or just anger, or frustration, or whatever. I've seen people lose their minds in a bad relationship. Not to say everybody would go as far as this lady did, but I know a lady who spoke at our convention, Robin Simpson, whose husband 6 months ago in Houston slaughtered her. He stabbed her 100 times and cut her brain out of her body. This was a real person that I really know. She's best friends of my manager. She spoke at the All Black National Convention. I met her husband. Her husband and her baby were in my hotel room in 2018-ish or 2019, I believe, when we had the convention in Houston. I met these people. And there was nothing I saw but this man that told me that this was how it was going to end for them. And it made me just really think about that and say, gosh, man, we got to fix this mental health thing. It didn't have to end that way. And now the baby has no parents, pretty much. Mama's gone, scared of daddy. And she's got insurance money because mama had insurance. But it's like, Lord Jesus. I mean, can we really take a moment and truly process and understand how not addressing mental health is really costing us in ways that go far beyond just the financial? The financial side is bad enough. The financial is already costing you trillions, but you're losing things that are more valuable than money. So I encourage everybody in here. I saw, shout out to Young Jeezy, the rapper. I saw him do a great interview with Nia Long where he was explaining his trauma dealing with his mother's trauma, his intergenerational, right? He said his mother pulled a gun on him when he was 13, and that's why he left the house, and he had to realize what his mother had gone through. But then he also had to stand up to his mother because his mother hated him. He claims his mother hated him because he looked like his daddy. So they're getting into it, Daddy's not in the house, so they're getting into it. When usually when the boy hits about 12 or 13, that's when the mother and the son start really clashing. And the reason I believe in the father is because the father, a strong father, sometimes will be the trump card. That's the one that shuts it all down. That's what happened in our house. When I got 12 or 13, I start talking back to my mother because I'm taller than her. My father, he's a Vietnam veteran, a police officer. He really has killed people. I did not mess with him. He also knew karate, so I knew just if I continued to escalate, it would not end well for me. So that's what kept order in the house. I told my wife, I said, I don't know how things would have gone if my father had not been there. I think me and my mother would have kept on escalating. Do you understand? And what then happens is that when you're escalating, when the child's escalating with the mother, the trump card becomes like the police. Eventually, he bumps into a police officer and he starts dealing with the police officer like he deals with his mama. And the police officer pulls out a gun or a billy club. And next thing you know, your child's got brain damage and he's in jail, right? Or he's shot and he's dead, right? So ultimately, I kind of feel like, because not everybody loves you like your daddy, not everybody loves you like your parents. So, really, long story short, I kind of feel like this mental health thing is something that we really should really put our energy into. I mean, right there next to the financial health. You have to address the mental and the physical health, because those are two major financial drains. Like we've talked about how if you don't take care of your physical health and you, let's say you're just like, I'm just going to pursue money, but I don't care about my physical health. Well, then you get fat and you get sick and you get cancer or you get whatever. And the next thing you know, you're giving all your money right back to Big Pharma and who's giving you a bunch of drugs to manage your health situation that you neglected because you were chasing your wealth, because you thought you could live in one compartment. You thought you could focus on one thing and be one dimensional and everything was going to be okay. You can't do that. It's an ecosystem. It's an eco health, wealth, and relationships all spill into each other. And so really sort of dealing with that holy trinity of what it means to be successful and to be well balanced in life, I think is critically important for all of us. Okay. Now, for those of you that just came in, just a reminder, later on today, I'm going to send out a list of these stocks that I like. And if you want to invest in Africa, I made a list of some assets you can invest in to benefit from the economic climate in Africa. Africa is really taking off in the next few years. So I'll text that to you. Text the word morning to 87948, and you'll not just get an invitation to the free financial consciousness training, but you'll also get that list of Africa stocks. Next, I want to mention that later on today, we're bringing in Shalay Camilo, who is a real estate expert who's going to talk to you about the housing market and break down opportunities that exist when it comes to real estate. Real estate ownership is one of the most important things that we can do as Black people, and ownership is absolutely critical. And so Shalay is one of our many experts in the Black Business School that helps us get that done. So if you'd like to join us, you can do a free trial. Just go to drboycerealestate.com. That's drboycerealestate.com. You can come in, talk to her, ask her questions, stuff like that. She kind of knows a little bit of everything, and she's a great, great lady, great speaker, very smart. All right, so that's going to happen later on tonight, about 7 o'clock, and then later on today, also at noon or one, we're doing the portfolio power play, and that's going to be where we talk solely about the stock market. So we kind of do a little bit of everything every day in the Black Business School. If you'd like to be invited to that, you can go to theblackstockmarketprogram.com, THE, theblackstockmarketprogram.com, and feel free to do a free trial there as well. All right, so let me mention to you the dream that I had. I had this dream. I'm not making this up. I woke up this morning early with my wife, and we talked for a little bit and got the kids off to school. And I said, you know, I'm tired. I want to go back to sleep. We didn't go to boot camp. I told you yesterday I went to her little boot camp. Today I was like, you know what? Let's take the day off, babe. It's raining and we're tired, and I want to go back to sleep. So I went back to sleep. And when I was sleeping, I had a dream that I was at this fancy dinner. And I was at a fancy dinner, and there was a little baby sitting there. And the baby was just sitting there by himself, but his parents were nearby. So I looked at this baby and I started talking to this baby, you know, like kind of gag-gag goo-goo, kind of playing around, you know, just like I threw him a toy or something. And his parents were sitting there, and I looked over his parents just to say hi, you know, because you can't be talking to people's kids with, you know, without acknowledging the parents. So I'm talking to this baby, and I was explaining to him why we were at this big dinner. I said, we're at this dinner because Black people need to give we need to ha give birth to our own economic children. Black people, we have a being economic babysitters, and you know, that history of being economic babysitters has not worked out for us. We need to have our own economic kids. We need to have things that belong to us. We've been babysitting for white people for a very long time. and this is not healthy. This is not what's going to get us to where we need to get to. And so anyway, with this conversation with this baby, I woke up and I was like, wow, that was really profound. It was very real. And I was really talking to him. And I said, that's really 100% true. If you really think about this, and this goes back to something I was actually addressing this morning on my podcast, where I actually talked about this situation with this professor and this guy named DJ Vlad. Did anybody see that? And by the way, can y'all still hear me? Somebody just said they can't hear me. Give me a yes really quick if you can hear me. I want to make sure it's I'm coming through okay. All right. So this professor at Princeton, Morgan Jenkins, I think that's her name, she got into it with this guy named DJ Vlad. DJ Vlad is kind of this guy who has a big platform called Vlad TV. And I know Vlad. I've been on Vlad TV a few times, and I've talked to him a couple of times. And they got into it over this whole beef, this rap beef. If you really want to find out, you know, like what's going on in that culture, I encourage you to pay attention. You know, the whole thing between Drake and Kendrick Lamar is interesting. It doesn't take long to figure out kind of what's going on. And they've been going back and forth, and I've been watching it all. It's really fascinating to watch because hip-hop beefs have always been interesting to me. I still go back to Ice Cube and how I felt when he released No Vaseline, and that was a big beef back in the day. And so I follow the beefs because the beefs are really interesting, an interesting part of the culture because, number one, it does reflect kind of the brilliance of hip-hop and the power of that music that we created, that genre we created, that's actually owned by other people now. Other people kind of own and run it, which is unfortunate, which is a reflection of our mindset and their mindset, but we created it. We developed all this. And so there's brilliance there, right? You know, it's kind of like a mental dexterity contest, and I respect that. But then the problem is that there's like this whole darker side of it, where literally people get killed over this stuff. You know, Jay Ortiz, the rapper who's hosting the Get Money Fest in Philadelphia. I'm going to be at the Get Money Fest on the 18th if you want to join us there. You know, he had a good friend named PNB Rock, who was a rapper, a rising rapper in LA. And next thing you know, he gets shot in a Denny's or something. And I remember talking to Jay about this. I talked to Jay extensively, and I said, are you sure you want to be in this industry where people get killed all the time? Like, and people, and for some people, it's just entertainment. They like that. They like seeing black men getting on a record threatening to murder each other. And they think that that's so cool and so interesting. And people like Vlad aren't really connected to, was it Roscoe's? I'm sorry. Thank you, Veronica. It wasn't Denny's, it was Roscoe's. Sorry. Not that being shot at a Roscoe's is better than being shot at a Denny's. I'd rather just not be shot at all. But it was Roscoe's, so my apologies to the Denny's Corporation for mislabeling their institution. All right, so anyway, and Roscoe's has great chicken. I like Roscoe's. So I ate there 2 months ago. So anyway, let's get back to it. So I remember just kind of, you know, like talking to Jay about it. I was like, do you really want to be in a profession where people are just getting killed like this? Like that's hazard pay, you know? And I said, be careful, man. You know, and then I remember when D1's another, you know, good friend of mine. And we talked extensively when he was challenging hip hop. Deed's done a great job of kind of speaking up on the problems in hip hop and what's going on with that. And he was challenging the rappers. They love to glorify violence and everything else. And I said, well, just remember, though, that these guys that glorify violence, there are people that really do love the idea of black people hurting each other. So I said, please be careful, man. Like, this is real life. This is serious. You know, what's your security look like? I have security. Do you have security? You know, and it's unfortunate that we live in that kind of world. Because remember, with that beef with Biggie and Tupac, like two men died. $2 billion brands disappeared because of the violence. Death Row Records was a multi-billion-dollar brand that pretty much died. It got owned, bought by Hasbro, Mr. Potato Head. Same company owns Mr. Potato Head, eventually owned Death Row Records. I think Snoop bought it back. Hopefully he can really bring it back, but he bought the brand, and I think that's great. But still, it was a missed opportunity, a missed opportunity. So long story short, I feel like with hip-hop, these beefs are interesting in the sense that they really kind of tell you a lot about what it's like to be black in America, what it's like to be a black man. And so there's this professor that was sort of speaking on the topic, and she got offended that Vlad, you know, made comments about it. And I wasn't offended by Vlad's comments per se, but I do understand that there are people who love to egg on the conflict because it's not real to them. It's not going to affect them. They don't know anybody who's really been killed in the streets. They don't know anybody who's been addicted to drugs. They don't, or like we do, or been incarcerated for drugs anyway. White people use drugs, but they don't get locked up for it. They may not know anybody whose family has been like busted apart because of the chaos in in the hip hop music industry. So what happened was when the professor made the comment, Vlad immediately like starts to tag her employer, Princeton University. That was the impression. He thought she still worked at Princeton, and he's tagging her employer, saying, you know, because I think that she had said something like, "It's a black conversation. You're white. Like you need to butt your way out of it." So rather than debating with her, he's like, "I'm tagging your employer. I'm calling your boss." And in a way that offended me, because I remember, you know, kind of being at Syracuse and having people do the same thing. You know, Bill O'Reilly in particular at Fox News did that, where he's like, "I'm calling your boss," and it reminded me almost like plantation talk, like I'm calling your owner, like who owns this Negro? Who you got to have a boss, because there's no such thing as an independent, free black person. So who is your boss? And I still go through that now. I have that now where people that want to cancel me, they're like, "We're going to call so and so." I'm like, "Who the hell are you gonna call? Ghostbusters? You can't. I'm not cancelable. The only way Boyce Watkins can be canceled is if Boyce Watkins decides to cancel Boyce Watkins." And I talked to him this morning, and he ain't canceling. He likes me. He thinks I'm doing a good job. So you can't cancel me. You can't cancel a free black man. You can't cancel a soldier. You can't cancel a man or a woman who knows who the hell they are and who ain't scared of you. Like, what are you talking about? Right? But this sort of mindset, it's almost like a Karen-ish kind of thing. And I think that they're accustomed to that. They sort of feel that all of us are owned by somebody else. And this goes back to the point I was making earlier about the dream about us being labeled or us seeing ourselves as economic babysitters. Whenever they talk about economics for black people, they always talk about jobs. Well, we want to help it. Like, I guarantee you, I bet you if I went up to a politician and said, "You know, black wealth is dropping, and we need to do something about economics in the black community. What do you propose, Senator White Man?" I bet you every nickel in my bank account that the first response is going to be, "Well, we're looking to create more jobs for African Americans. The black unemployment rate is at a historic low." That's what they always brag about. They always start talking about how many jobs you got. We have many places for African Americans. When they integrated you so you could come and get jobs. That's they didn't integrate you to become owners or controllers of capital or anything or bosses. They integrated you so that you could become employees. And the thing about it was, it wasn't just their fault though. It was also us. We were former slaves. We were just looking for a pay raise. We were like, "Look, I don't mind being a slave. I just want to be a high-paid slave. I'll still be a slave. But you got to pay me, because it was wrong for you to enslave me against my will and not give me any money. Now, this is different because I'm volunteering for slavery and you're compensating me. If you do those two things, then it's cool. I'll be still be a, I like the slavery ain't so bad if you're getting paid for it." So really, to some extent, we are seen and we see ourselves as stewards of white economic power. We are the overseer. We are the bodyguard. We're the bouncer at the club. That's kind of how we see ourselves. It's not, and it's a mindset. It's a mindset. It's like, okay, can I? I am going into this world because my parents think that it's elitist for Dr. Boyce to talk about things like the $5 a day plan and invest for your child. They think that he's out of his mind to argue that no black child really should have to work for anybody if their parents make a plan for them. That's crazy. That's a fantasy. That's an illusion. Whatever. Okay, yeah, my PhD is not real. Let's throw that in the toilet. So because my parents don't believe in anything better for me, they throw me out in this economy, this competitive economic system with no resources, no protection, no assets, no nothing. And the best thing I know to do, the best instructions they left me, I'm reading the instructions from mom and dad about what to do to survive in this economy. And it could say, you know, buy real estate, start a business, make investments, sell stock options. It could say a lot of it, but no, it says fill out the application and go get a job. And make sure that you get you a good job, that getting a good education at the big white university down the street. I'm not making fun of anybody, I promise. Sometimes I get carried away. So if I'm hurting your feelings, please chalk it up to my insensitivity. I apologize for that. Okay. But I hope that you will get my point. I hope you'll get my point. it ain't just that they see us as their economic babysitters. We see ourselves as the economic babysitters. A black man to this point, as of 2024, and probably 25, 26, 36, 46, and 56, a black man will get more praise and applause for getting a good job than he'll ever get for starting his own damn business. Tell me if I'm lying. Tell me if I'm lying. You will get more praise if someone comes along with some institution they've already built and they label you, they give you a fancy title or you get some fancy degree. Like, I am now a neuroscientist and I work at such and such a hospital. You'll get more credit for that than being the person who says, you know, I think I want to go build and own a hospital. People will be like, what? How are you going to do that? That's not possible. It's not possible to own a hospital. Well, shit, Jewish people do it. Have you ever heard of Jewish hospital? How many of y'all have heard of Jewish hospital? They don't think it's crazy. I'm not saying everybody can, but somebody can own something up in here. I mean, really. So when I was talking to that baby in the dream, that's what I was saying to the baby. I said, you know, the reason that your parents are here now, I don't know, maybe the baby represents like your children and I'm talking to your kids about the parents and we were at a dinner, like we all gathered for a purpose in this dream. I don't know. I'm still trying to process it. And I was like, well, the reason we're here now is because black people need to stop being economic babysitters and start having our own children. Because when you have your own child, it's yours. You know, you can shape it into whatever you want it to be. You get to, now it's hard work. It's hard work. It's not easy and it's not glamorous. You don't get like an instant 8-year-old, right? You got to raise that baby from the time they're little, sickness and health. You got an ugly baby, pretty baby. You got to take care of it. These are your kids and you can only have so many in your lifetime. But when you raise them and you're there and you are embedded in the root and the core of who that child is, you have a direct connection to the epicenter of that child's whole entire neurological existence. Like, you literally, that child really becomes an extension of you if you're really pouring in that time into that kid. But if you're like, you know, if you think about it, like if I'm like the kid's track coach or something, I can have some influence, but I can't override the parents. Take it from me. I mentored a lot of kids. I used to coach track in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm a big track and field fan, by the way. I love track and field. And I was a track coach and I loved the kids and I did my absolute best to mentor them. But some of the kids, their parents were so damn crazy that that kid, I would check on the kid 5 years later and say, how's so-and-so doing? Oh, he's selling drugs. I'd be like, yeah, that's kind of the direction that his family was sending him in. And I tried my best. So, you know, me, I'm sitting there like, no, you know, you could go to college and you could do this and you could do that. Please. My little sentences didn't have no influence over what they were seeing every single day in the house. So ultimately, the same thing is true when you talk about your economics. When you talk about great American institutions, great American corporations, when you talk about Apple and Google and Microsoft and Tesla and all these companies, in almost every single one of those situations, you see one consistent variable in most of these corporations, and that's this thing called racism. If I go to Google and I say, let's have a meeting of all the engineers that are working on the important algorithms and artificial intelligence plans for Google, and let's gather them all together, I'm going to see a bunch of white people, a bunch of Asian people, and a bunch of Indian people. I'm not going to see a lot of black engineers in that room. You know what I'm going to see black people? When they have the office party and they're looking for entertainment and they need a rapper or a comedian. Oh, then you'll see Kevin Hart or somebody in there, you know, or some rapper, you know, Big Booty Frida or something, you know, like that's what you're going to see. You'll see us in there when it comes time for entertainment, but you don't see us in there when it's time to design the future of America or to determine or discern the direction of the organization. And this is not just true in a place like a Google. I remember at Syracuse. I remember when I was on the faculty there, I said, you kind of ghettoized your black professors. All your black professors are over in Africana studies, but when you're making decisions that are going to drive the direction of this campus, there are no black people present. It's mostly white people. But here's the thing. Here's the truth of that. Remember, every yin has a yang. Every heads has a tails. Every coin has another side to it. So here's the other side of that coin, which brings it back to our accountability. The question is, why do we believe in an illusion that does not exist? What makes us believe that we can really walk up in somebody else's institution that they shaped in their image, that they built in their own way, and really think that we can really have a say in the direction of that institution? We might have helped to build it. We helped to build a lot of stuff. Black people helped to build a lot of things. But you know, but I will say this, you know, when I was in Syracuse, I remember looking at the origin of Syracuse, and I saw the very beginnings of this institution when it was young and raggedy, and I saw a bunch of white men planning the future of this institution. And so there were no black people there. So why would I expect as a black man that this institution is really going to truly be influenced by me when I'm kind of a economic babysitter? I'm a steward of their power. I am basically protecting and helping to build what they've already built. I'm riding on a bus that they already put the engine in. Do you understand? So I think that we have to really sort of train our kids to put an engine in their own bus. We have to train our children not to be economic babysitters, but to become parents of institutions that they can actually nurture and feed and grow the same way you nurture, feed, and grow your own child. I don't care how many hours you spend babysitting somebody else's baby, you will never be the parent. You will never be the parent. And so if you are a person who aborts all your kids, I don't want to make this political. I hope you get the analogy. I'm not talking about real abortion. I'm talking about economic abortion. We abort all of our best ideas. We get rid of them. We throw them away. We are absolute dream killers. We run up to each other because we haven't addressed our trauma, and we murder each other's dreams in broad daylight. That Negro can't do nothing. What are you talking about? That's crazy. You ain't got no money. You don't know what you're doing. Your business is stupid. I went there. Your food was terrible. This service is horrible. You need to be out of it. You're a scammer. All these things, right? We destroy each other. We murder each other's dreams in broad daylight. We abort each other's businesses. There's literally mass murder, mass economic murder. That should be a term, MEM. Mass economic murder in the black community, because whenever somebody tries to do something a little different, we're always waiting for them to fail. We are always looking for the mistake, looking for the reason that their business is not as good as the white business down the street, without considering the fact that they're trying to do 10 times as much with one third of the resources. They don't have the thing. They can't get the bank loan. They don't have the expertise. They're figuring out as they go along. They're making mistakes, because that is what you do when you grow. If you look in the history of any of these big white institutions that are out here, you will find horrific mistakes that they made along the way. You can go look at McDonald's. You can look at IBM. You can look at all these corporations, and you will find situations where they made horrific mistakes. But they were able to continue to grow. They were able to learn and build off those mistakes. So ultimately, what I really think is that when you get back to that key premise of being an economic babysitter versus being an economic parent, if we don't embrace the idea of economic parenthood, if we don't embrace the idea of understanding the importance of building our own institutions, we will always end up feeling and looking like complete damn suckers. We're going to look like suckers. We're going to look like beggars. We're going to look like people that are looking for love in all the wrong places. We're going to be like the abused stepchild, because that's what you are. You're an economic orphan. When you go into this economy and you don't have roots that tie you to something that is absolutely yours or connected to your family, you are an economic orphan. And we know in this world, anybody who's read books like Oliver Twist, you know how orphans get treated. Orphans get abused. Orphans get abandoned. Orphans have to take whatever they can get. Orphans have nowhere to go. Orphans have no security whatsoever. So don't you dare throw your child out in this world as an economic orphan. You at least buy that damn little kid some shares of stock. You got time. Your 7-year-old has another 11 years before they become an adult. And really another, if they're 7, they have another 18 years before their brain is fully developed and they enter the game of full-time economic warfare with white men who want to see him dead. So it is up to you to make the conscious decision, to be conscious enough to start making some little tiny investments for that child so they're not going out into this world butt naked. It doesn't mean you have to make them into a business owner. It does not mean they have to go and be a full-time entrepreneur. It does not mean that they can't work for other people. It just means you don't want to abandon them as an economic orphan because, according to people like Dr. Claude Anderson, that is a form of child abuse. That is child abuse. And so I circle back to that interview Young Jeezy did, where he talked about his mother and how his mother pulled a gun on him, and his mother used to threaten him and yell at him and be emotionally cold toward him, and she abused him, and she didn't even know she was abusing him because somebody probably abused her even worse. At some point, somebody's got to break the cycle. At some point, someone has to decide, you know what, this is enough. We're not doing this no more. This is not how we do it in this family. So I want to challenge you to be that person. This is your chance. This is your time. This is your time. When it's over, it's going to be over. When we're dead, no one's going to really remember us. They might, I'm hoping maybe they'll remember this Black Economic Revolution. I think that we've done some things in this generation that are worthy of remembrance, but they may not remember any of this. So this is your time. What are you going to do? The clock is ticking. Okay. I'm done. I don't have anything else to say, actually. So later on today, we're going to do the portfolio power play. If you stick around for a second, I'll give you a link where you can join us today if you want to. Give me one second here. Let me see if I can find it. And also, if you're not on the text list, text the word stock to 87948. If you text, or sorry, text morning to 87948. If you text morning to 87948, then I'll send you the list of the African stocks that I talked about earlier. And let me see if I can find the link here, the Zoom link for today's portfolio power play. And if you're on the text list, if you text morning to 87948, I'll also text you all a reminder. It's going to be, it looks like it is, okay, 12 Eastern. Is that the time? Yeah. There, yeah, 12 Eastern, 12 Eastern. So we're going to literally, it's all stocks. So I'm literally going to just break down the stock market. You can ask me about stocks that you're interested in, stuff like that. And that's kind of what we do there. So let me put that link in the chat for you guys if you'd like to join us. Let's see, let me make sure I hit this everyone button. There we go. Okay, so there's that link. And also, if you want to join us in Philadelphia, the Get Money Fest is the 18th of May. And shout out to Jay Ortiz, and a lot of people will be there. Madam President Tierra KJ Williams, a lot of great people. So if you'd like to join us there, there's the link. If you'd like to take a look at that, I think it's standing room only. So you may want the free tickets are standing room only, but beyond that, because I think they're gonna have a packed house. But if you want the VIP pass, that kind of gives you some access, and you can come upstairs and hang out with us as the VIPs. And then that's pretty much it. Okay, guys, so I'm gonna get out of here. I hope you guys have a great day, and I hope this conversation was beneficial to you. I hope that this helped us to elevate our consciousness for today, and I hope you'll do at least one thing today that's gonna move you forward in this journey. And we're gonna meet tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern. We do this every single day, 7 days a week. And I appreciate all of you for hanging out with me, and I hope that I'm adding value to your life in some meaningful way. That I'm doing my absolute best. So take care, have a great one, and I'll see you guys soon. Take care. Bye-bye.